Cincinnati Public Schools has work to do to finalize its budget and three levy options to consider. This comes as the district faces a major shortfall. I'm Zach Carrion, filling in on Cincinnati Edition for Lucy May. CPS leaders join us today to talk about the difficult decisions ahead. Superintendent Shauna Murphy, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you for having me. Good to see you, Zach.
Thank you. I'm also joined by Cincinnati Public Schools Board of Education President Brandon Craig. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Zach. Thanks for having me.
Yes. And with us today also is Treasurer Mike Gustin. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Zach.
All right. So getting into the questions here, CPS needs to cut, well, it was $58 million to start with from its budget this year. What created this funding gap in the first place? And what's going on with the district's revenue sources? Because why is this happening? That's a pretty big gap.
Everyone looks at me when they say revenue.
Yeah, so. The money guy.
Yeah, the money guy. Really, this is honestly things that were done to the district. So the state made two big changes very recently. One of them are the property tax reform measures that were signed by the Governor DeWine in January of this year. And that really flattens out all of our property tax revenue going forward. We don't get any benefit from being on the 20 mil floor anymore. We don't see kind of reappraisal increases. The other side of that equation, though, is that the state has continued to deinvest in the Fair School Funding Plan. And so as our kind of local revenues have stayed flat, the state share continues to drop. And I think our state share, you know, is down in the low 30s now. It'll eventually be down to 20%. And so the combination of not getting new local revenue plus a decrease in state funding really puts us in a difficult financial position.
Yeah, and can you kind of explain the Fair School Funding Plan for people who are not familiar? They were supposed to reach a certain benchmark, but haven't quite fulfilled that. What's going on there?
Yeah, so this really goes back several decades to a state Supreme Court decision, DeRolf versus Ohio, that declared the way that state funds schools to be unconstitutional. And the reason was because of the over-reliance on property taxes. So just keep this number out. Back when the DeRolf decision was first enacted, state funded about 47% of education. And then there were multiple attempts by different legislatures to come up with a way to constitutionally fund schools. The last iteration was a Fair School Funding Plan. And it builds a bunch of cost inputs as well as revenue inputs into a system to give each district an amount of money that kind of takes into account the wealth of the district, the needs of the students, all those things. Unfortunately, it's very expensive. You know, it's one of those things where the state legislature looks at it and says, this is really expensive. And so over time, there's been different ways to not fund it. You know, it started with a phase in. And so they phased in at 25% and then 50% and 75%, finally to get to 100%, which you know, we're all waiting for. But the other thing that they've done is they've messed around with the inputs. So what they do is they do cost inputs. So that's how much it costs to educate a student. And then they do kind of district income inputs. So the last iteration, they skewed the system. So we're using the most recent income inputs. So we're getting credit for all of the property tax, wealth, and wealth in the district. But they're using the cost inputs from 2023. And so obviously, if you don't have the updated cost, you know, it skews the system, and so the state is paying less.
And, you know, this has caused issues in school districts statewide. You can look at Cleveland, Columbus. They've had to make hundreds of job cuts in the past couple of months because of this. Here in Cincinnati, I know the school board last week approved about 110 positions to be cut for the upcoming school year. Ms. Murphy, can you describe what these positions are? What is the school district going to be losing next year?
Yeah, great question. I do want to add that when Treasurer says, that this started decades ago, he's absolutely right. I was in grad school when this case first came down. And the biggest problem I have is that it's been decades and we still can't get it right. And so districts like Cincinnati Public Schools were faced with making administrative cuts, making some programmatic cuts. Very controversial to have the counselors and the school social workers reduced, having assistant principals reduced, and it's really going to be tough. We've made a commitment to preserve the classroom and direct supports in terms of instruction. However, some of those external supports, those who support the classroom and the teachers, will be lessened. But we are still committed to keeping many of those supports in each school. So schools will still have access to school social workers, still have access to school counselors, but there will be, it will feel very different in our school district.
Yeah, and you know, you talked about not wanting to affect the classroom there. How did CPS's administration identify these jobs and say, maybe we can live without this for now, or this would make the least amount of impact? How was that determination made?
Well, first of all, this year what we did was we started the budget looking at what we legally are obligated to do, so that took a big chunk of money away. Then we looked at our contractual obligations, because we do have multiple unions in our school district, and we made sure we fulfilled that obligation. For example, class size measures. And then that left us with about $150 million or so to work with. And so we looked and we said, okay, we have to have X number of school social workers. We want one in each building. We had a surplus of more than one for each building, so we would start there. How much can we pull back? Keeping in place still some of the supports, like a bully school social worker, we thought would be critically important to have and maintain in our district. And so we really just kind of started looking at our minimums, looking at what we had above and beyond the minimum. And the pain point here is that these are things that make our district super special, and they stand out. And they've been things that other districts like Columbus, Cleveland have come to visit us to see, how do you do this? So we are, unfortunately, having to make those adjustments. We also keep in mind the people who are behind the positions. And so we worked really hard to repurpose many of the people into other positions that they're suited for and that they're qualified to do.
And the people behind those positions have been coming to school board meetings in the past weeks and months, making their voices heard. Brandon Craig, as the school board president, how will the loss of these positions affect the school district? And what have you been hearing from the people who will be losing their jobs here?
So I think, you know, there's never a loss in our district that doesn't have some effect. And I think the reality is, as much as we can try to mitigate those effects, and as much as we can put folks in place to ensure that as much as possible our students receive the same quality of education, the same quality of experience, we recognize that fewer people does mean more challenges and more efforts that need to be made. I think one of the things that we have been very thoughtful in doing, and keeping folks as much as possible, the people behind those jobs in the district, we're wanting to keep folks who want to be here for our kids. It is our motto, it is our statement, it is our affirmation. And so we want to make sure we have people who are here for our kids still in our district. So we have worked really hard to do so. I think the challenge is that, again, folks are never going to want to lose their job, and no one wants to have people lose their job. But we do have to make sure that we don't lose sight of the ultimate challenge here, which is we have to provide a quality of education that continues to grow the academic results for our students. And so that's where our focal point's been. We'd recognize, in order to do so, you need to have those student supports there. You need to have folks in the district central office who can make sure we're able to run effectively. So we're running lean. I will say that we are running lean, but we're trying to be more effective and more efficient, and we're consistently looking at how we can do that better.
We're talking about balancing the budget for Cincinnati Public Schools. You can join the conversation. Give us a call at 513-419-7100. We're talking with the superintendent, the treasurer, and board president, Craig. School district is going to be running lean with those job cuts that have already been approved. How, Ms. Murphy, how is the school district going to equally spread out these resources? Because these resources are going to be a little more scarce this year.
They'll definitely be more scarce. One of the things that we do have that is a benefit and a source of pride for Cincinnati Public Schools are our partners. And I've gotten many phone calls and emails from partners willing to step up to help us in ways that they have not done in the past, but they understand the situation that we are in. We also already have started figuring out how we can combine some of our efforts, how we can pull together departments that have been standalone in the past, and people are raising their hand and they are stepping up to do what we need to do to continue to be successful and to improve and increase our student outcomes.
We talked about what was that $58 million budget gap, a little bit smaller now that some cuts have been made, but Treasurer Augustin, even with those cuts, the budget still hasn't been fully approved. I think some people last week expected things to be done and finalized at last week's board meeting. What was going on there? Because you said that there were some things that kind of still needed to be calculated and accounted for. What exactly happened?
Yeah, that's a great question. Part of it is, and I said this, computational things. You know, there's a lot of, I think, big swings in this budget. And so one thing I'll go back to say, you know, this is our third year of making cuts. So the easy cuts, for the most part, have been done. If there's a single thing that's easy to cut, that's no one's going to really notice that was done years ago. So what we're looking at are more complex things. And so part of it was computational, is just making sure we're not double counting. You know, there's reductions in force was on the table. There's the furloughs. We also recognize some savings from keeping vacancies, just because we know there are vacancies every year. You know, we can't double, triple count those savings. So we had to be really sure about that. There's some other things that we have requests out or negotiations currently going, and just making sure those negotiations finish the way we want. You know, some of them are finishing in our favor. I think we'll have more revenue, you know, than we originally anticipated, but just making sure those pieces get done. You know, part of the budget is kind of three levels. So there's obviously the fund level, that's the appropriations, the board approved those. There's a budget we present publicly, which is usually by school or department and how much money they have. And then there's the budget that my team keeps, which is every single line item, you know, with a huge level of detail. That's our state reporting. You know, that's what drives the day-to-day transactions, and making sure all three of those are aligned.
Yeah, and I know those job cuts get the big headlines, but there's a lot of really smaller cuts in this budget proposal. Will kind of adjusting these variables affect those cuts? Maybe some things can be actually funded this coming year because of some of those calculations.
Yeah, I mean, and part of the thing to say about a budget is a plan, and plans can be modified. And, you know, as I assume we'll have, you know, some revisions throughout the year, you know, inside, you know, as we go through the year and we have unanticipated things we need to fund, you know, or we find things that come in under what we anticipated, you know, there's some flexibility there.
And I know in a couple of weeks, the school board has another meeting. Are we expecting the budget to be passed then? I'll put it up to either one of you guys.
I think our hope would be, and this is why I would say around passing a budget, I think our hope would be that we were able to go through substantial portions of the budget to be fully recognized in a board meeting that this is where we're moving towards. This is the direction we're moving in. What I might add, though, is that we have portions of the budget that we're still going to need to have some flexibility in with regard to our strategic plan that we're working through, as well as the reality is that our budgets every year get modified throughout the year because of changes that happen. You know, again, I don't think any school board in 2020, they were creating their budgets in 2019, expected COVID to come through. And so you make adjustments, you reevaluate, and you make changes as you go forward. But I think our goal is to have a good portion, which is all information that's been shared. Much of what's in the budget book that we've had board meetings has been the same information for several weeks now. So it shouldn't be any surprises for a lot of it.
We're talking about the Cincinnati Public Schools budget. We will continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition. This is Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Zach Carrion in for Lucy May. A quick note about a special show we have coming up July 15th. Cincinnati Edition is hosting a live program on data centers, and you can join the studio audience. Go to WVXU.org to register. We're back with Cincinnati Public Schools Superintendent Shauna Murphy, Treasurer Mike Augustin, and Board of Education President Brandon Craig to discuss the district's budget. You can join this conversation. Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. You know, in the last portion here, we talked a little bit about having to account for some decisions that may have not been made earlier on. And I know Board President Craig, you have talked about this several times before, is avoiding some hard decisions in the past, which has created some difficult decisions this year and in this budget. Can you elaborate on that? What were some things that were being avoided?
So I think we recognized even 3 or 4 years ago, we were going to face some challenges coming out of, you know, the loss of ESSER dollars. So we had programmatic elements, we had personnel elements that were part of ESSER, and that we were putting off making those hard decisions of whether we discontinue or lessen some programmatic aspects or some things that we had committed to as part of those ESSER funds. I think the other thing that we did not do the greatest job of is recognizing as we make changes to the district that it would have certain effects and that it may lead us to have to make harder decisions about other things in the future. So we can look at everything from whether it's transportation needs, whether it is the curriculum changes that we, you know, did throughout the years and whether or not those elements were things that we were planning out. But at the end of the day, we went to those things that would have the least personnel hit for many of the cuts in the past. What that means now is that all of these cuts are going to hit to some level personnel. And so not to say we should have been getting rid of a bunch of people, none of those things. I just think we needed to have that conversation and that reality check earlier in the process to say, we are going to be sitting here a year or 2 years later having to make personnel decisions that maybe we could have looked at or explored. How do we make these changes or how do we look for extra resources or funding in preparation for it?
Well, yeah, and I think it's worth mentioning that, you know, personnel, that those salaries, those benefits, those kind of make up for any school district the largest amount of a budget. So $58 million, that kind of has to come from personnel. So I want to talk a little bit about some input some community members have given on this issue. I know a lot of people have come to board meetings opposing these personnel cuts. Superintendent Murphy, you've said before that this is a situation where you feel like the administration's hands are tied. So why did the administration decide that it was position cuts, personnel cuts, that were the focus of this budget rather than some of the technology services and vendor contracts that some other people have suggested be cut?
Definitely appreciate that question. So I will tell you, when I had the opportunity to start this job as interim superintendent, day one of work was cutting $32 million. Those were the paper clips and the things that didn't have much of an impact on individuals. Some impact, but not much. Then the second year, we were about $50 million. But when you get to over $100 million of a budget, there are no more paper clips. And so it does then shift to personnel. And don't get me wrong, we have reduced some of the technology uses. We were going in and going through COVID, the goal was to get a device in everybody's hand. Even our youngest learners, our kindergarten students, needed a device. Well, now we have parents and listening to our parents, listening to our teachers, too much screen time. And so an opportunity to respond to that and to pull back on some of that technology. So yes, we have done that. That is a part of what our plan includes for this year. But then you run out of those options. Contracts, people always talk about reduced contracts. Some of the dilemma that we have, most of the contracts are in our title budgets, and those budgets go out to the schools. And so it is one leverage that schools have to make decisions about what they need to be successful. So do I want to take that opportunity away from a school to make a decision? Not really. And so we're trying to leave that decision making in the hands of the schools, in the hands of their instructional leadership team.
Yeah, and there is certainly a larger conversation happening in the education world about screen time in the classroom and the use of technology. You know, while there may be some cuts there, CPS hasn't totally wiped that out, still using iReady next year. Why not totally phase that out immediately? If it would save the district, you know, a sizable amount of money, it could save a couple jobs.
Yeah, the I-Ready contract is about $900 million.
$900,000.
I looked at Mike because I knew that wasn't right. But the issue is we're a school district and we have to have curriculum. We have to have instructional pieces. We have to monitor to what extent our students are learning and they're mastering our standards. And that is currently the tool that we use.
And another point of contention in this budget proposal is those 5 furlough days for teachers and administrators. Can you kind of explain what that is going to look like? Does that mean, you know, a teacher out of the classroom and a sub in their place? What exactly will that be?
So the 5 furlough days, we are looking at days at this time, although it's not been finalized, not been approved, but we're looking at days where this is not going to have an impact on the classroom. So we do have professional development days available to us that we could make some adjustments to. And so we're hoping and doing our very best not to inconvenience families, not to lessen the time that students have in the classroom.
And for Treasurer Gustin, you know, certainly the district will save money with those furlough days, but there is also a cost of living adjustment for teachers in this budget proposal as well. Very similar cost numbers there. So is this kind of canceling out some of that cost of living raise for teachers if this furlough days, those 5 furlough days are approved?
Yeah, I wouldn't look at it that way. I mean, cost of living adjustment was negotiated. It was agreed upon. It will be there. It's part of the salary schedule. It will be there this year. It'll be there next year. It'll be there for every year in the future. I think another way, a better way to look at the furlough is that you're spreading, unfortunately, the pain. You know, I think the cost of the furlough represents about 100 employees. You know, and so the idea that, you know, 3,000 of us can feel a little bit of pain to save 100 employees' jobs, I think that's how I look at it.
And, you know, these job cuts, this is something that a lot of school districts are experiencing. And certainly I think some people would say that this is kind of right-sizing for school districts. You know, people were hired on because of that ESSER funding in some cases, and now things are kind of, I guess, shrinking down to a more manageable size for school districts. Either board member Craig, do you feel like this is a right sizing, or do you feel like this is maybe not the right fit for the district as far as these job cuts?
So I wouldn't call it right sizing, because I think the reality is that what we're facing is making the necessary cuts to exist and to continue to provide good quality services. I think the reality, though, is that there's not a single person in this district that would say we don't need more from the state. And even the state's own study said because of the proportion of students that are come from economically disadvantaged households and number of students in our district that have disabilities and high level, you know, and serious disabilities, we need further funding from the state. So a true investment into our students from the state would mean we could provide the necessary services. Now, what I do think we have been doing this year is being more strategic about how we provide those services and how we deliver those services to our students to ensure we're getting good academic results out. And that is a bit of a change in some ways, because in the past, it's always been, let's add more. And we'll just add on to what we've been doing. And that's what every district generally has done when there's been additional resources provided. What we are faced with now is saying, can we do the work to get students educated better by being more effective and creating what we have now created our networks to really focus the energy and the attention into the school building while still giving that guidance from above on the main central office level.
We're talking about balancing the budget for Cincinnati Public Schools. You can join the conversation. Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. A question for the administration here. Throughout this entire process, you guys have encouraged community members to reach out to lawmakers, reach out to folks in the State House, and advocate for better public school funding. Have you guys seen progress on that front? And what are you really looking for as far as change at the state level?
Sure. We've had some conversations even with some legislators. So, you know, everything's kind of gearing up for obviously the governor's election in November. And then, you know, the state will have a new biennial budget coming up. Really what we've really asked for, the big one, is just fund the Fair School Funding Plan. You know, it's simple. Everyone agreed to it. It was, when it first passed, it was passed with a huge bipartisan majority. So it's not controversial. And I understand it costs a lot of money to fund it, but also the state's bringing in quite a bit of revenue right now. One other place where I think we could see some real traction is in funding special ed. And so I think President Craig kind of mentioned this, but, you know, it's one of those costs that, you know, we have a legal and moral obligation to educate special ed students. A lot of times that costs far more, depending on the disabilities. The state actually did a study and commissioned a study to say how much would it cost to fund special ed correctly in the state. And, of course, they promptly shelved that study. So if we could get them to dust that back off, if we could get some changes in the next budget to really truly, you know, help the state fund for special ed, and that would really help our district and probably a lot of districts out there.
So it sounds like you're asking for continued pressure, continued advocacy from folks in the community. How can they do that? How can they advocate for their local schools?
Yeah, I think you know, reaching out to your local legislature is important. You know, your state rep or your state senator. And I know the folks in kind of the core of Cincinnati work hard for us, you know, Representative Isaacson, Senator Ingram, Senator Blessing, but just keeping that pressure on and letting people know that the citizens know how schools are funded, they know something is wrong, and they want to see action.
We are very close to the end of the current fiscal year, and the new one begins in July. I want to take us back to this time last year. There was some issues with federal funding. I'm sure you all remember. A lot of school districts around the country and here in Ohio, CPS included, without warning, lost some of that federal funding, or it was pulled back really without any warning. CPS joined a federal lawsuit to release these funds, and eventually the government did back down. We are approaching July again, a few days away. Are there concerns that this could happen again? Is that federal funding confirmed, locked in for the new fiscal year?
As much as anything can be locked in, I think we're good. You know, the state has given us their allocations. The state generally doesn't proceed unless they feel comfortable. So, yeah, one thing to remember is districts get very little direct federal funding. You know, most of the big programs like Title I are administered to the state. So there's kind of like a, you know, this goes from the feds to the state to us. But we've been working, actually, my team is working on that right now, getting all the applications in, getting the initial budgets in for all those funds. But we don't anticipate an issue this year.
Just to add a quick thought on that, though, what happened previously was their pause on funding to review. So those funds had already been allocated. Those funds had already been voted on and had already been passed. I think what we are seeing is that their efforts to do so brought forth a lot of pushback, even not just from districts like ours, but across the country. So I don't imagine them doing something similar with the funding. I think the concern we're kind of doing is making sure that future funding efforts fully fund those things that are necessary for districts to run in the support that we get from the federal government.
The other piece we had last year that caused us a lot of pauses, it was also a year where the state was working to pass their budget. And so we were in a holding pattern towards the end of June, waiting to see what decisions they would make too. So that coupled with what was happening with the federal funds, I mean, we got that notification expecting that money in early July, very much at the end of June. And so it's the unknown around school finance that is super challenging.
And, you know, is there more unknown because of all the changes at the federal level with the Department of Education? Kind of seems like things are changing week to week. You don't know what the department is going to do, where they're going to shift certain responsibilities. How has that affected budget planning and just really organizing the district?
I don't think this year we have seen that impact yet as they continue to move through and make the decisions that they need to make. I know probably most recently was the whole special education piece and where will that live, but nothing quite yet. The other piece is as we watch the legislator and their work, sometimes there are things added into bills that impact us directly that we have to make pivots for, mandates, for example, math improvement plans probably are going to be a part of our work for this upcoming school year. And so we just stay ready for all the things that they may decide to do.
For folks listening, don't forget you can join the conversation. You can give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Do you have questions about what's coming for Cincinnati Public Schools, questions about the budget, send them our way. One small thing about the upcoming federal funding. I know last year CPS received around $60,000 for Title III funding for English language learners and immigrant students. Pretty small in the grand scheme of things, but you know, it's still $60,000. This year, it looks like the district is getting zero. Treasurer Gustin, can you kind of explain why that is?
Yeah, there's actually two Title III programs. There's the base Title III is for English language learners. There's a separate kind of set aside for immigrants specifically. That has went away. That no longer exists. And so not a huge amount of money, but honestly, every bit helps. So that was, I think overall Title III might have went up slightly, but it's still a loss. It's just part of our planning that we, as we plan on how to use those funds, we have to absorb and move on.
Was there like a specific reason given for why that went to zero? Was there a certain threshold not met or certain qualifications?
Yeah, there was. Trying to remember, the state told us why we didn't qualify. They basically changed some of the qualification percentages. We actually asked them to review it, and they was like, no, you still won't qualify. So,
okay. Now, kind of looking ahead here. With kind of what's happening with state funding and federal funding, what is CPS doing to improve its financial outlook long term? Because we've seen the state put a lot of money into voucher programs and charter schools. How is this going to affect the district long term? And is there a way the district can prepare for this for the future?
We are in the midst of our strategic plan. And a part of the strategic plan, not only helping us with our instructional practices, we have asked our consultants to also work with us on our aligned financial plan. And so the goals of the strategic plan, we want to not just have a plan that then we don't have any funding for it. And so we're looking at advice that we're getting from a consultant to help us make sure we're able to do all of the strategies within that plan in order to help move the kids forward.
We're talking about the financial situation at Cincinnati Public Schools in the upcoming school year. Coming up next, we're going to talk about the levy and the levy options for Cincinnati Public Schools. We will continue our conversation in just a moment. This is Cincinnati Edition. You're tuned to Cincinnati Edition on WVXU. I'm Zach Carrion in for Lucy May. We want to tell you about a show we've been working on in the run-up to the midterms. I hope you've been studying for your midterms because it's going to be important. Cincinnati Edition wants to know the top issues for you in this upcoming election. Give us a call at 513-419-7100. Leave your name and share your thoughts, and we may use your comment in an upcoming show. Okay, we are in the final part of our conversation here about the CPS budget. We talked a little bit about some of the cuts that were made and some things that are going to be on the horizon. A big thing on the horizon now is levy options for the school district. It's pretty clear the school district needs some money in this upcoming school year. The question is, how much? I am joined by Cincinnati Public Schools Superintendent Shauna Murphy, Treasurer Mike Gustin, and Board of Education President Brandon Craig to discuss this. You can join the conversation. Give us a call at 513-419-7100. or email talk@wvxu. Okay, so it seems like it's a high possibility of a levy going on the ballot in November, the first new money levy in 10 years. I'm going to direct this to the superintendent. Why did the administration feel like this was the right time for a levy?
As I mentioned earlier, 2 years ago was $32 million, last year, $50 million this year. I mean, we're into personnel. We are into trying to protect the classroom, but there are still services that we are adjusting that do impact and support our young people. And so there are other options. We don't like any of the other options. And so we feel to be able to continue to provide the best services for our young people, to give them the quality education they deserve, and to be good stewards of the money. We need new money in order to move forward.
And I know this question has been put to the school board many, many times over the past couple of months, especially. There has been some resistance to this by some on the school board who are kind of asking for the district to do a little bit more to prove that they can use these funds adequately. First of all, where do you stand, President Craig, on a new levy for the school district? And what's kind of been the issue trying to get others on board?
So, you know, my stance, and I've said this publicly, is that I want us to recognize that we have to use these funds that we would ask from the voters to give us in a effective way. And so that meant having something that we could put our efforts towards to show a new or beneficial programming change or improvement or adaptation for our students that would give them better results. Everything we do has to be tied to increasing our student outcomes. And so we have some efforts. We have some work that we're doing right now to kind of put together that full picture of the plan of how we would use these resources in addition to just an operational needs of the district. We recognize there are opportunities for us to use this as a moment to really build upon what would be the work from the strategic plan, as well as the work the district's already doing in certain areas. I think the reluctance from some on our board is not necessarily to supporting a levy, but it's in fact to wanting that answer first and wanting that picture to be filled in better before they can give their full support. Everyone on our board has expressed support for reaching out and asking our voters to support us when our state won't. But we have different standards as far as how we get there. And so I think it's reasonable to say, let's put a plan together. Let's tell the voters how we're going to spend our money, not dissimilar to what we did when we went forward 10 years ago for the levy that included preschool dollars that brought forth Preschool Promise.
And, you know, that deadline is August 5th, I believe, to get something on the ballot. Do we think that this strategic plan is going to be done by then, or do you think does it have to be done by then? As far as, are these things really a package deal?
So the ideas that are coming out of the work that's been done, talking with community, talking with stakeholders, talking with staff, is pointing in the direction of some pretty serious and interesting outcomes for young people. We have a skeletal system of what we think this is going to look like. We have some sessions already being set up to share back with the stakeholders. Hey, this is what you shared with us, and now let's show you this is what we think where we're going to land. And so we're getting very close, and I am highly optimistic that all of this will come together and we'll be able to paint a picture of amazing things for young people.
I want to talk about what happened last week with the school board meeting. Three resolutions of necessity approved by the school board. You don't see that very often. Usually, a lot of times, the school district will go with one option and just kind of go from there. So why three options, and what happens now, President Craig?
So really, we had a recommendation out of the Budget Finance Committee, Budget Finance and Growth Committee, and that was for the 7 mil. I think what was also recognized is that 7 mils is not, you know, be quite honest, even the 8 mil number is not what the district absolutely ultimately needs in the full capacity, right? Because we recognize that we need more investment from the state to truly make that work. But I think there was a thought from other board members who were not on that committee as to, can we potentially explore a higher amount that would allow us to do some more substantial investment into repairing and updating our facilities? It's something we've been putting off year after year after year. The other question mark was, what's the best method to go to the voters and ask for additional funds, whether it's the traditional property tax route or whether it was this earned income tax route? And again, I think there's benefits on both sides. There's thoughts on both sides of which way is the best route to go. But in order for us to consider it and actually vote in support of it, we needed to have the votes for those votes for each of those to be done so that we could pick one of them, because you can only vote for one that you've already gotten approved through the appropriate channels with either the Department of Taxation or through the county auditor. And so in order for us to have the options to really be able to talk through and figure out what those look like and mean, and to be able to communicate to the public what's coming, we had to do those votes.
And Treasurer Gustin, when you talk about millage and property taxes, I think a lot of times it can sound like a different language. So can you talk a little bit about some of the millage in these proposals? I know the administration had its original recommendation. How was that determined? And how are these other options a little bit different?
Sure. So I'll talk about the 7 mil first. That was the one that came out of the Budget, Finance, and Growth Committee. And we had those conversations in committee since probably December, where they asked us to go and look at some sizing scenarios and do some math around, you know, looking at inflation, looking at facilities repair plan, looking at new initiatives. And so we had been working on that for a while. That's kind of how we got the 7 mils. That would add about $64.8 million of revenue annually for the district. The 8 mil, and again, like President Craig said, was more of a, hey, you know, we probably need, or some board members felt they wanted more. That came in. That would give us about $74 million annually. And then the income tax would be the same amount annually, but just kind of brought in a different way. So I know property taxes are tough. Millage is not something that's really easy to convert for folks. I will say one of the changes to kind of the property tax reform is changing the ballot language. So it will be a little clearer this year. It says based on $100,000 home, here's how much, you know, additional tax will be levied. So that is nice for folks.
And these resolutions of necessity have been now sent to the auditor. What's the update with that? What's coming next?
Yeah, so we sent those out probably the day after, had to sign everything. So the county auditor has 10 days to turn around kind of a certification of what we put. They'll exactly calculate out the amount. We also sent one to the Ohio Department of Taxation. They have the same turnaround time. So we get those back. We get all three of those back. We'll update the board, you know, and that'll obviously be kind of the starting point for the conversation on the 13th.
We're talking about levy options for Cincinnati Public Schools. You can join the conversation. Give us a call at 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. Looks like we do have a email here. I've read in the media that potential levy formats we may see this fall. I don't feel predisposed to support any of them. Having paid taxes for 46 plus years, I've yet to see the needle move in a positive manner for the district. The problem seems to begin at home. What is being done to increase results that are home-based support? So perhaps I could put that to the superintendent.
Yeah, we believe we're all in this together. We believe that that the citizens of Cincinnati will come out and support us because the children are our future. We have 34,000 young people who are counting on all of us, not just the people who are in the school district, but we need the entire city's help. You've heard the whole show about how the state is not helping us. Actually, the state is hurting us. How the feds are not as helpful as they have been in the past. And I'm hoping that the public will see we've made as many possible changes and tried to be very good stewards of dollars that we have. We do see results. In the preschool promise levy, We know that the data we have shows that those 3 and 4 year olds who attend a preschool do better in kindergarten readiness once they get to kindergarten. We do see math scores, Algebra 1, improving over time. We do see our workforce readiness and credentialing of our young people. We have more students earning credentials in workforce than ever before. And so we are very excited about telling our story over these next couple of months better than we have ever done before. And we are asking the people of Cincinnati to please support our young people.
And certainly in the past, voters in Cincinnati have supported Cincinnati Public Schools and shown overwhelming support for new property taxes, bond issues, things like that. But when you look at what's happened locally here in Ohio with the success rate of new money requests, it's not good. In the last election this spring, really only one school district, Mount Healthy City Schools, was the only one to pass a new money levy. That was extreme circumstances for that school district, a fiscal emergency, risk of losing sports, high stakes. For Treasurer Gustin, how do you go about determining what might be the right size of a levy option when you kind of consider what people can afford to pay, what they're willing to support? How is that kind of calculated in your mind?
I mean, that's a great question. It may be more appropriate to the board members, but I mean, from our perspective, we looked at kind of our ongoing cost, you know, what things are driving our cost, you know, just what's the inflation rate, you know, just like every household, everything we buy gets that much more expensive, you know? And so we looked at those things. We did some modeling. You know, we tried to leave some space for strategic plan stuff. We tried to leave some space for facilities repair, but we also modeled different versions of that. It wasn't just all or nothing. It was what about 20%? What about 30% of that? So that kind of gives you one perspective. And then obviously we worked with the board members who are more in tune to, you know, what the community is willing to bear, what they're willing to pay for to try to get to those numbers.
President Craig, about 20 seconds. These levies, what are you looking at? What might you support here?
You know, I think we're going to support what is going to be the best result for our students, what are giving the best option for us as a district, and what will have the most support. And so at the end of the day, if folks want to give their thoughts, we always have hearing of the public, but always feel free to reach out and email me. But we really want to support what's going to be best for our long-term future.
Awesome. I've been joined today by Cincinnati Public Schools Superintendent Shauna Murphy, Treasurer Mike Gustin, Board of Education President Brandon Craig. Thank you all for being here. You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Harper Carlton. Technical director is Carlos Lopez Cornu. I'm Zach Carrion. Thank you for listening.